Welcome to Everyone Loves Guitar, where we sit down and talk with interesting professional guitar players, uncover their stories, and discover what makes them tick. If you love guitar, music, and the backstory of people's lives, stick around. You're in the right place. If you're enjoying this show and you'd like to support it, go to everyonelovesguitar.com/support. And for information on advertising, visit everyonelovesguitar.com/advertise. Are you looking to buy or sell a home in the Tampa Bay area without having to deal with pushy realtors? Then make sure you connect with West Florida Real Estate. West Florida Real Estate has helped over 300 homeowners and investors buy and sell their properties over the last 5 years. Their service is outstanding, just like back in the days when there was actually service in the service business, and you'll never have to deal with any kind of sales junk when you're working with them. For more information, email Ann with an E at westfloridarealestate.com. That's A-N-N-E at westfloridarealestate.com. Hey, everybody, this is Craig Garber. Welcome to Everyone Loves Guitar in coronavirus world. Man, we're going to give some love to the rhythm section today with an excellent bassist, super experienced and really smart guy, Derek Frank. He's a touring and session bass player out of LA. A couple of quick announcements. I want to thank our mutual friends, Joe Augello and Joshua Ray Gooch, for connecting us. I had the pleasure of meeting Joe at NAMM. I have not met Josh in person yet. Also, make sure you go to everyonelovesguitar.com/subscribe and subscribe to the show. And if you're listening on YouTube, hit the subscribe button below on your right and click the bell. All righty, Derek Frank, originally from Pittsburgh, started playing bass as a kid, practicing obsessively. Shortly after graduating from the music program at the University of Miami, he moved out to LA. Since then, he's performed in 25 countries and 48 states on tours with a variety of artists and bands. He's currently the bass player for Gwen Stefani. He's been with Shania Twain playing bass with her for 5 years. He's also a member of the LA-based rock band, The Dirty Diamond. Hey, Fernando. And he's also part of the Soundcheck Live House Band at the Lucky Strike Live in Hollywood, which I think Joe's in that band too, no?
Joe subs quite a bit.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. He's one of our guests on a regular basis, and then he subs in the house band sometimes.
That's a tough gig, isn't it?
It's a lot of tunes. It's a lot of homework every time we do the gig, but it's a total blast.
That's awesome, man. Yeah. I would imagine that gives you a lot of visibility and actually credibility in the music market.
Yeah, probably. I mean, it's usually packed. We get a lot of people out there. It's kind of like one of those gigs that's kind of a scene, you know?
Yeah.
We do it once a month. We get a lot of great special guests, a lot of kind of high profile people come and play with us sometimes. And yeah, it's fun.
Coolest person you've jammed with there?
There? We've had a lot of great people. Probably Jackson Brown.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, Jackson came and did a set with us a while back. He was great.
That's really cool.
And we've had Nuno Betancourt comes down a bunch. Orianthe comes down sometimes. We've had a lot of really great people.
That's awesome.
It's cool.
Good opportunity for you.
Yeah.
Derek's also toured with Shakira, Air Supply. Did you play with Aaron?
Yeah. Actually, I just listened to your interview with Aaron the other night.
He's cool. A really nice guy. I got to hang with him here a little bit when he was in Orlando. We went up there.
Cool. You went and saw the show?
Yeah. Really nice. And I felt so bad for him because something happened. They had like a sound guy or like a sub sound guy, and he couldn't even hang out. He had to take care of sound. It was just a stressful day, but he's a nice guy.
Yeah, sure.
He's also spent 9 years from 2010 to 2018 with Mindy Abair and the Bone Shakers, Daniel Powder, Victoria Justice, Jeff Golub, Dancing with the Stars for 3 seasons, and Brian Auger's Oblivion Express for like almost close to 20 years, as well as other people. He's done one-off performances, including TV shows with Poe, Alan Parsons, Greg Raleigh Band, of course, Greg Raleigh from Santana. He's the old keyboard.
Yeah,
from Santana.
Yeah.
Christina Aguilera, Keb Mo, Jennifer Page, and others. And he's played bass on well over 40 albums as a session player. He also has a solo record called Let the Games Begin, and he's working on another one to be released this year, which we'll talk about after that. When he's not on tour, he teaches at MI, and he splits his time between his homes in LA and Mammoth Lakes, where he lives with his wife, Annette. and like a dog and a couple of cats. Did I get that right?
Yep. We got a dog, Penny, two cats, Ringo and Sherwin.
Everybody calls their cat Ringo, every musician.
Yeah, I guess most could popular. Be one of those typical pet names, you know.
No, it's good, man. There's nothing wrong with it. Hey, man, thank you so much for coming on the show. I really appreciate your time.
Thanks for having me.
All right, so you grew up in Pittsburgh, I think, and then you moved to Cleveland mm-hmm. as a kid. And then you went to University of Miami. What prompted you to go down to school down there?
Well, they just had a program that was really well-suited to what I was doing. It was a great jazz program, but very welcoming for electric bass players. I've never really been an upright player. Even though I played jazz, I just never really got into upright. And every other college, their jazz program, you know, was pretty traditional, pretty rooted in big band stuff. But Miami had a lot of electric jazz stuff going on, fusion and a lot of pop stuff as well. So I'd pretty much narrowed it down to Miami and Berkeley. And I went and visited Miami and I just liked it and it ended up being the only school I applied to.
Very cool, man. I've interviewed so many guys out of University of Miami.
There's a lot of great players that have come out of Miami. A lot of them are out here in L.A. Yeah.
Anybody you went to school with that you wind up meeting or bumping into in L.A.?
Oh, there's a lot of people, a lot of great musicians that I play with and hang with. Keyboard player Jeff Babko is out here. Sure. He plays in the Jimmy Kimmel Band, among many other things. Drummer Kevin Stevens, we play together a lot. Jason Sutter, Brandon Buckley, a lot of drummers. Guitar player named Andrew Sinewick. I don't know if you've had him on the show yet.
He was on the show. Man, did you hear his last record?
Incredible. Oh, so good.
It's like my first thing I said is, how is it that the best funk record I've heard in 10 years is from a white dude from Maryland or something like that?
Right, right.
It's a great album, man.
Absolutely. Yeah, he's just such a monster player. Yeah, he's played in my band quite a bit.
Oh, that's awesome, man. Yeah. Very cool. So after you graduated, you headed straight out to LA, is that correct?
I went to Boston for a short time. I was there less than a year. I was there with a girl, didn't work out, didn't really get plugged into the scene all that well up there. So yeah, after about a year, I bailed. Yeah, moved to LA.
What prompted you to do that, and how'd you get work once you got out there?
Well, I moved to LA kind of by mistake. It was a thing where I was leaving Boston and I had a lot of friends in San Francisco that were playing jazz and making it work, you know, making a living at it. And that's kind of where my head was at the time. So I was like, I'm going to go to San Francisco. But my parents had moved to LA while I was in college at Miami. And I just never really checked out LA for some reason. I'd only been to LA on, breaks from school. But they were living in LA and I was like, you know what, I'm going to go just kind of reset, live with my parents for the summer, maybe get a day job, save some money. I was broke at the time. And I was like, I'll just go live with my parents for a bit and then move to San Fran. But it was like, after I was in town for like a week, I was sold on LA. Like, I had friends from college that were out here. They were already gigging. They kind of threw me gigs right away. I was gigging within, a couple weeks of being in town. So I was like, you know what, there's no reason for me to be anywhere but here. I grew to love LA. You know, I've been here 23 years now.
What made your folks go out there?
Job. My dad took a job in LA. He worked for Southern California Edison, the power company.
Oh, cool.
They were in Florida before that. He was with Florida Power and Light.
FP&L, right on.
FPL. Yep. Mm-hmm. Yep. Yep.
When you once you got out there, was there any like cultural adjustments you had to make?
Not really. I loved it. It kind of felt like home right away. You know, like some cities you can go to and they just, you feel kind of weird. You feel maybe out of place. It doesn't feel that comfortable. You don't feel like you belong there. LA was one of those places that I felt like I embraced it right away and it embraced me. I loved it. You know, it's the entertainment capital of the world. You know, everything's going on here and just the music scene is so great. And I fell in love with it immediately.
And I guess even though you grew up in the Midwest, Miami probably set you, you could go anywhere after you living in Miami.
Yeah. Miami, going to Miami from Cleveland was kind of, that was the culture shock.
What was
it? I grew up in the suburbs, suburbs of Pittsburgh and Cleveland and small towns in Connecticut. And I went to Miami, which is this major, multicultural city. It was just a different world,
Yeah.
I didn't really like Miami. I didn't find it to be that friendly of a city.
It's South Florida in general is not friendly. I lived in Plantation for like 15 years. It is really not friendly at all.
Yeah, it's kind of weird. I mean, I came from the Midwest where, you know, it's people are friendly. People are friendly to each other. It's just kind of the vibe. Miami, I don't know. I felt to be very
aggressive. It's really aggressive.
Yeah, that's a good way to put it. Yeah. So that was kind of a culture shock when I first moved there. Yeah. I eventually, you know, got used to it. Of course, I did my 4 years, you know, in college, but I couldn't wait to get out of there. It wasn't my home, you know?
Yeah, I get that. When we moved to Tampa, it was a big change for the better for us too. And I grew up in New York City, but I found South Florida just incredibly aggressive, you know,
which is
weird.
It's interesting.
All right. So I'm going to talk about some of the artists you've played with. If you could tell me how you got the gig and if there's any cool or interesting stories about working with them. Mindy Abair, you were with her a really long time.
Yeah, from like 2010 to 2018. Yeah.
That's a long time. Well, how did you get that gig?
Yeah. I had a couple friends in her band, guitarist Jay Gore and drummer Jamie Tate. They were already in her band for a while, and it came time for her to find a bass player, so they threw my name in the hat. It was interesting. She actually scouted me. I didn't realize it, but she told me later, like, I was gigging with my own band at the time, and she came to one of my gigs at the Mint, this club in LA, and I didn't even know she was there, and she was checking me out, you know, and
that's awesome.
She told me later, she's like, oh yeah, I came to see you. I was like, you didn't even say hello. but she had a little audition, and she ended up picking me, and yeah, had a lot of fun with that band. She's awesome. Great musician, great person. Always had great people in the band. You know, we had, you know, a little bit of turnover, some players changing over the years. But man, so fun, you know, so much fun musically.
That's great. And if you're comfortable, and I'm not looking for gossip, what happened? Like, how come you were there a long time? Was it just time?
It got to the point where my schedule was just getting too crazy. I just couldn't do it anymore, and it just made sense for the guy who was subbing for me to become the main guy. She was always really cool with me. Like whenever I would get, you know, kind of more high profile tours or whatever, she was always cool with me subbing out. I would call her and be like, ah, I just got called for the summer tour. It's a good opportunity, you know? And she was always so cool. She's like, go do the tour, come back, you know, we'll keep your seat warm for you, you know? She was always really great about that. And then it got to a point where I was just, things were kind of picking up in my career, and I was kind of getting called for one thing after another. And they were just opportunities that I couldn't pass up.
Good.
You know, Shania, Air Supply, Gwen, It just got to the point where I wasn't there. I wasn't on the Mindy gigs anymore. And Ben White, the guy who was subbing for me, he was just there way more than me. And we talked about it, and I was like, yeah, it just makes sense, you know.
Good.
And I'll be here to sub if you need me to sub. You
know? That's good. Hey man, that's a nice problem to have, you know.
Yeah, yeah. And we're still on great terms. I got to talk to her every now and then, and yeah.
Very cool, man.
Yeah.
How did you get the gig with Shania? And we were talking. I've had a bunch of those guys on here at this point.
Yeah.
How did that come about?
So, Joshua Ray Gooch, you've had on the show. We knew each other just through kind of like jam sessions in town and stuff. I used to host a jam at a club called Cafe Cordial, and Josh would come down and sit in. We kind of knew each other a little bit from that. Was that my email or yours? If it's mine, I'm gonna quit.
No, not mine.
That was mine. Yeah, let me quit.
All good, man.
Yeah,
I didn't even hear it. So
I don't want to have that dinging in the background. But anyway, yeah. So Joshua Ray Gooch. He was doing a kind of a weekly blues gig at this hotel bar in Beverly Hills, and he called me for it, and it was just like he called me that day, and I was like, okay, yeah, I'll scramble and learn all these tunes and come down. And I went down and played. We just had a great time playing together. It just kind of, we gelled really well and had a great time hanging. And I was just saying, you know, hey, how's the Shania gig? Because he'd been on it for a while. She had just finished her Vegas residency at Caesars. And he's like, yeah, it's a great gig, total blast. You know, she might be changing up the band. Like, would you be interested if she was looking for a bass player? And of course I was like, yeah. So,
no, Josh, I don't want a permanent gig at the,
no, I don't want to play with a country pop superstar. I don't want to do that. Yeah. So,
no way.
Yeah. So, he threw my name in the hat to Corey, who you've also had on the show, Corey Churko, who's her band leader.
Right. He's director. A super talented dude, man.
Yeah. Oh, amazing. They're both just incredible.
Yeah.
So he threw my name in the hat to Corey. Corey had me send in just like some video links and things like that. So I sent that to Corey, and it turns out, the musical director who was actually putting the whole show together, overseeing the whole thing, was Will Hollis, who is the MD on the Dancing with the Stars tours that I had done years before. Oh. So Will was like, oh yeah, I know Derek. Yeah, I've had him on some tours. So I kind of had two people in my corner throwing my name in the hat. So that helped. So then she was just, for that tour, she was just auditioning bass and drums. And so she narrowed it down to four bass players and six drummers. And we all went down to an audition. This is like a month after Josh threw my name in the hat. It was a great audition. It was like an all day thing. They mixed and matched us. They had every bass player play with every drummer just to see who gelled and who was the right vibe. So I did the audition and, ended up getting offered the gig.
That's nice. You know what? That's like, that brings up a really important point. So you had this gig in 07, 08, and 09 with Dancing with the Stars. Mm-hmm. And that connection there later was a support for you shortly afterwards when he's, hey man, that guy's a good mm-hmm. dude. And this business is so like that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you really need to treat everybody good on all the gigs, man.
Absolutely. Because if you work with somebody on one gig and that ends, you never know. Years later, they might be doing something else and say, oh yeah, you know, get him. You know, it might not happen right away. Like, you know, I worked with Will, 2007 to 2009, and then didn't work with him again until 2015.
Yeah.
It's kind of like that sometimes, you know?
Any funny stories or interesting or cool stories? I forgot to ask you, Mindy and Shania.
They're all, there's so many funny stories. You know, it's like when you're on the road, you run into so many crazy people, you know, usually in the audience, you know, just people in general are maniacs. So I think just, and then you just have a lot of laughs, just like riding around in buses and vans with people. It's just a lot of joking around. And, you know, the cool thing is we musicians, we're kind of allowed and also expected to act like children a lot of times.
Sure.
You know?
Yeah.
So, there's just a lot of goofing off and a lot of funny stuff. I can't think of any one instance from those gigs, but there are just so many, you know, we just had a lot of laughs and a lot of good times.
Man, I tell you, Joshua, young guy, now he's a guy acts way older than he is, you know, he's positive.
An old soul.
Yeah. But he's a super positive person, you know? And I remember mm-hmm. that about him. It was very nice mm-hmm. to connect with him on that.
Yeah, for sure.
Brian Auger. So for people who don't know Brian, why don't you talk about who Brian is? And you've been with him forever.
Yeah, I Brian Auger, first of all, he's a Hammond B3 legend, basically. Had a band in the late 60s out of the UK called Brian Auger Trinity with a singer named Julie Driscoll. That turned into Brian Auger's Oblivion Express, which was kind of like a fusion acid jazz band, led by Brian playing B3 organ. And he's just a complete monster. I mean, he is so good. And I was aware of him early on. I had a friend, my buddy Dan Lutz, was playing bass with him. And there was a tour that Dan couldn't do in 2002. So he recommended me to Brian. Brian gave me a call. We went and jammed. It all worked out. And he said, hey, let's go on the road. So that was 2002, like early 2002. And I was with him pretty much full time up till about 2010. And then I filled in here and there. I subbed for a little bit. The bass chair with his band was kind of rotating based on people's availability. So for a while there were like three of us that were kind of rotating in and out. I was with him full time for a while and then just kind of on a rotating basis for a bit.
Yeah.
And, I just talked to his son yesterday, actually. Karma is the drummer and kind of runs the whole ship. And
is he still touring? I mean, nobody's touring now, but is he still out there doing it?
Oh, yeah. He still takes the Oblivion Express out. He also plays with a really big Italian artist named Zucchero.
Oh, yeah. I've had his Cat Dyson, I think, plays with him.
Oh, right? Cool. Oh, really? Okay, cool.
I've had a couple of his guitar players on here.
Oh, cool. Yeah, so Brian's been playing with him for years, and apparently he had a huge tour this year that completely got canceled. So I'm not sure when Brian's going to go back out with his own band, but yeah, I mean, he still plays all over the world, you know, spends a lot of time in Europe. And when I was touring with him, we were in Europe a few times a year.
That's nice, man. Very cool.
He's great. And it's just playing with him was just such a joy. I mean, he's just going for it constantly, means every note he plays. Like the minute he puts his hands on the B3, like his just facial expression changes. Like when his fingers hit those keys, it's just like, ah, he just turns into this monster and he's just ripping. Yeah. I was just love that.
In your experience, do you think some of that is maybe because he's an older guy and like, you know, when you get older, you kind of like, fuck it. You have less inhibitions. Has he always been like that?
He's probably always been like that. Yeah. You know, I just think that's kind of who he is as a musician.
That's great.
And I just love it. You know, you just tell he means everything he plays. You know, it's awesome.
Any other gigs that you've done that you want to talk about that were cool or just interesting or memorable?
I mean, they're all fun. They're all cool and memorable. You know, I've been really lucky to have been able to play with a lot of great people. You know, Brian was the first guy I toured with. So that was like my first experience on the road. From him, I went on to kind of get into some pop stuff. Worked with an act named Ali and AJ. They were like a Disney act on Hollywood Records and did a couple tours with them. That was kind of my initiation into the pop world. They were great. They're still out there touring as well. And of course, you know, Shania, Gwen, you know, love playing with both of them. Nindy was great. We talked about that. And I've had some opportunities to fill in with some people here and there, but it's been good. I've been really lucky to have been able to work with some really good artists over the years. I hear a lot of nightmare stories about people just working with horrible artists, you know, major divas, stuff like that. I haven't had those experiences. I feel like every tour I've been on has been positive, you know,
and that's great.
You know, I've never really had any negative things to say about people I've been on the road with.
You're good with one of the things, like I watch videos of you. You're like fully aware that you're in the entertainment business just by, doing stuff like how you dress. You're dressed really cool, like to entertain. You know, is that,
thank you.
Yeah, man. I mean, and I noticed that. I'm sure I'm not the only one noticed. I'm sure your artists noticed that. But I mean, when you're putting effort into stuff like that, you know, you're not showing up in jeans and a t-shirt, which is nothing wrong with it. But, you know, I think when you're in, especially these big gigs, you're an entertainer, man. And you want to look good up there.
You got to dress the part, you know, like image is a big part of it. Like, you can't be playing with Gwen Stefani and wearing a polo shirt and Dockers, you know? And I like it. Like I honestly love playing dress up, you know?
You know, I'm
into clothes.
You can see that.
One thing that's really fun for me is like when these tours are being put together, you talk about wardrobe, you know, that's part of it. Okay, well, what's the look going to be? And a lot of these artists will have stylists and you work with the stylist and, you know, you work together to figure out what your stage outfit's going to be. And I love that.
That's cool, man.
And a lot of time these stylists will like just bring racks of clothes for you. You email them all your sizes and stuff and they just bring a bunch of stuff. And I'm pretty particular about what I wear. I like clothes. I like fashion.
Right. Well, you could tell, man, you're like well put together on stage. You could tell like, you know, this is a guy that took his time and effort and would deliberately to look good, man.
Cool. Thanks. And I like picking out my own stuff. I mean, a lot of times like when those stylists bring the racks of clothes, I'd be like, it's okay. But I'm like, I'll start looking online to find some stuff ahead of time. Like, what about this? What about this? And it's kind of cool when an artist will give you a little bit of freedom and they don't just like give you like a costume. Cause a lot of artists do that. Like, you know, they're just like, this is your costume. It's cool when they can give you a general vibe and be like, this is kind of the general vibe. This is the color scheme. And then you can pick stuff out. Like with the Gwen thing, I just had this idea of wearing like a white tuxedo jacket, you know, with like some skinny jeans and stuff. I found when I showed it to Gwen, she's like, yeah, that's cool. Get that, you know? So it's kind of cool when you get to do that, you know?
That is cool. I mean, you even do up your hair different ways, which is like really, I don't have that luxury, of course, but I mean, you know, I recognize when other people do the effort, it's pretty cool, man.
Oh, cool. Hey, it's fun.
Yeah, man. Well, you could tell you're having fun up there. That's what's nice about it. You know, it's not like you're up there like, God, get me the fuck out of these clothes. You know, you could tell you like enjoying what you're doing and the whole spirit of it.
I like it. And not everybody does. Like some people are just like, I just want to wear, you know, I want to wear my jeans and t-shirt. What? I got to wear this funny outfit. But like, I don't know. I'm just into it. I remember once getting called for a tour the director, the creative director called me and he's like, "Hey man, we're having a problem with this bass player. Like, would you potentially be able to do this tour?" And I was like, "What's going on?" It's like, the guy won't wear the freaking wardrobe. Like, apparently, like, they had the band like in suits or something. And he's like, "I'm not wearing a suit," you know? Like, and so the creative director's like, "Dude, like, all right, well, I'm going to start calling some other bass players. Like, if you're not going to wear the clothes," I was like, "Yeah, I'll put the suit on. Come on. I'm wearing suits."
That's cool.
And the guy ended up saying, "Okay, I'll wear the suit."
Oh, okay. Yeah. I had Steve Stevens on the show, and he's like totally macked out on stage. And he was just like in, you know, not obvious for the interview. He was just in casual clothes. And I said, "You know, you're always super stylish." And he goes, "Look," he goes, "You think I can get on stage with Billy Idol in sweatpants? You're kidding yourself."
Oh, of course.
You know, that's the whole vibe up there, man. You gotta be who you gotta be stylish up there for that kind of a gig.
Yeah. Yeah. There's an expectation there, you know?
Yeah. Well, you do it well, man. So congrats to you.
Thank you.
What was growing up in Pittsburgh and Cleveland like? What was your childhood like?
It's great. I had a great, great childhood, great family life, and you know, just great suburban upbringing. You know, it's like I was born in Pittsburgh. We lived in one suburb, then we moved to Baltimore for a short bit, then moved back to Pittsburgh for a few years in a different suburb. So I totally had that just like suburban childhood. You know,
good for you, man.
Where you know. There's a big city nearby that we could go to access the things that big cities offer, you know, like concerts and, you know, things like that, good restaurants and stuff like that, you know, but we lived out in the suburbs, and it was just kind of, it was great. I had a great childhood, you know,
like very cool,
you know, rode BMX bikes with all my friends in the neighborhood and had woods to go play in and all that stuff, you know?
Right on, man.
Yeah. Yeah.
Pittsburgh is like a tech and banking hub now, isn't it?
It's interesting. It's changed a lot. I mean, you know, it's known as like, you know, a Rust Belt city. My dad did work for the steel company. He worked for U.S. Steel, which is, you know, the big industry. Yeah. Was the big industry in Pittsburgh for years. Our family left there when I was 10, so it kind of didn't really have any ties moving on. But my wife and I went there a couple years back for a vacation, basically. Went for like a week. She wanted to see where I grew up, and we were actually going to see U2. We wanted to see the Joshua Tree tour, and I was busy that year, and I couldn't see them in LA. So we're like, "All right, where are they playing? Where it's a break in my schedule?" We're like, "Pittsburgh, great! You can see where I grew up. We'll go see U2." That whole trip turned into us seeing U2, Tom Petty, like 2 months before he passed, and Game 5 of the Stanley Cup Finals.
Oh Pittsburgh, my God, Nashville. That's a pretty cool.
It was like this epic Pittsburgh thing. But like in going back there, I hadn't really experienced Pittsburgh as an adult, aside from like a couple of tour stops where it's kind of, you know, in and out. It's a great city, you know, it's really come up.
That's cool, man.
Yeah. A lot of great restaurants and like kind of hipster neighborhoods now. It's a really cool city.
That's very cool, man. That sounds like a great vacation.
Yeah.
Anything you're looking to do more of over the next, like, assuming life gets back to normal for all of us sooner than later, hopefully. I hate to say, what are your short term and long term goals, but what things do you have planned or, you know?
Well, I'm still in Gwen Stefani's band and Shania Twain's band, and we're in the midst of a Vegas residency for both artists in the same venue, both at the Zappos Theater and Planet Hollywood. So we have a lot of dates on the books for that. Gwen's last run in Vegas was supposed to be in May and obviously got canceled. So that's going to be rescheduled. So we'll have one more run in Vegas with Gwen at some point. Hasn't been announced yet. We just got to see how this all plays out. And then Shania's booked through 2021. We canceled a bunch of dates as well that will be rescheduled. So, you know, who knows, that might go till 2022 now just because of this, because of the cancellations. I've got more stuff with them potentially coming up when we can get back to live shows. Yeah. So I've got that to look forward to. We actually have a European festival run with Gwen in July.
Oh, great.
As of now, it's still on the books, and we'll see. I'm keeping my fingers crossed that that's still there. We'll see. We all just gotta kind of be open to change at this point. But so European festival tour with Gwen, you know, another Vegas run with Shania in August and beyond. And in the meantime, I'm just writing and planning my next solo record, which I'm hoping to record at the end of June. I've been talking to Jim Scott, producer, and
Joe Satriani's producer, as you just told me before.
And Tedeschi Trucks Band and so many other people. He's got a great studio in Valencia called Pliers. I've done some session work there, and it's just a complete playground of vintage gear. So I was talking to Jim about recording the record there. So I'm going to do that. And then I just look forward to, once the record's done, start gigging with my own band again. Because it's something I was doing for a couple years and kind of mellowed out on that. So I look forward to getting back to that.
Is that a trio or a four or what?
As of now, I'm planning it as a four piece. Keys, guitar, bass, drums. I've had ideas of maybe expanding it to a five piece with either two keyboardists or two guitarists. I just got to see how it all plays out. Like, I'm just kind of writing sketches right now, just kind of basic sketches. And then once I get guys into play, we'll kind of see what the music needs.
That's so cool. Do you have like people in mind for these slots? If you can share.
Yeah, definitely. I've talked to Joshua Ray Gooch again about playing guitar on it. Ty Bailey is going to play keys. He's Katy Perry's keyboard player. And we do some gigs around town with this soul band, which is really fun. And Ty's a big B3 guy.
Okay.
And that's keyboard wise, that's mainly what it's going to be on the record. A lot of B3 and clav.
And you like obviously the soul groove stuff then. Cause you like even your excitement about, even when you're talking about Brian Auger, the B3 seems to really, mm-hmm. Vibe well with you.
Yeah, that's the kind of stuff I really dig. Like, I've been a big fan of John Scofield's for a long time. Like his John Scofield band, the Uber Jam stuff, his stuff that he's done with Nesky, Martin, and Wood. Sure. I just love the vibe of that stuff. So I'm trying to figure out a way to do something similar to that, but that will feature the bass a little bit more.
That's awesome, man.
So that's kind of the vibe that I'm going for.
Very cool. I'll look forward to hearing your record. Hopefully you come on the show and preview it.
Cool. Yeah, cool.
Derek, what were some of the low points or darker periods you've had to deal with?
My real lowest point or kind of darkest point came at kind of a high point in my career. Unfortunately, I was on a tour in China with an artist named Daniel Powder back in April, 2 years ago. And first day of the tour, I got a call that my mom passed away.
Oh my God.
And I was in China. It was like the first day, we were about to start a production rehearsal and got the call, and I'm in the middle of nowhere, an hour outside of Beijing, about to start this 3-week tour. And it was, obviously it's a rough thing. And at the time I was kind of in shock. I was like, okay, do I go home? Do I bail on the tour? These guys are counting on me. It happened suddenly and unexpectedly. I was like, there's nothing I can do at home, but do I go home just to be home, be with my family, or do I stay here? Do I at least go back to the hotel and just shine this rehearsal, or do I rehearse? It was like one of those things where just like, I had no idea what to do when I got
there's no so, frame of reference for anything like
yeah,
that.
That's
the
problem. I was talking to my sister and she was saying, there's nothing you can do. If you want to continue the tour, and for me being, a musician, that's like where I find comfort in playing. Yeah. And so, I decided to continue the tour. Luckily I was with a great group of people, great artists. He immediately, like, we were all just hanging outside waiting for the crew to get set up. Well, when I got the call, and Daniel was just like, whatever you need, if you need to go home, cool. If you need me to fly your wife out, cool. Like,
that's really,
he was great. Great, yeah. Great artist, great guy, great band. So I continued the tour. It was rough. I was just obviously in a totally weird headspace for the whole tour. I kind of couldn't wait to get home. I was happy to be on tour with people with good people, that kind of kept my spirits up. I was happy to get the comfort from playing, because that's where I'm at my happiest, is when I'm playing my instrument in front of people. And I got to do that. But at the same time, I was just like, I can't wait to get home and just shut down for a bit. But of course, I didn't get the opportunity to do that for quite a while. 2 days after I got that news, I got a call to join Gwen Stefani's band. And it was like right when that tour ended, I was like, I was gonna have to miss some rehearsals. And I was like, well, I'm back on this date. I can be in rehearsal the next morning. So I was like, okay, well, I'm not going to get time to just be home and grieve. I'm going to go right back into work when I get home. But it's like, how do you say no to Gwen Stefani? You know,
no, you can't.
So I got called for that. So I was like, okay, I'm not going to get a chance to shut down for a while. I'm going to go right into Gwen rehearsals. So I went into Gwen rehearsals for a month. Wow. And then we had a Vegas, we had a Vegas run, you know, after that was the Vegas residency. And then, I was like, okay, well, after that first Vegas run, then I rented a place in Colorado for a month. And I was just like, I'm going to get away and just shut down, process everything. But then of course I got called to go sub with Shakira for a little bit. So I was like, okay, I can't say no to Shakira. So I'm going to go do that. Then I got a call to do some Shania stuff. She had a big festival in Brazil, which would require me to do another show in the States as like a warm up. It's like, okay, got to do the Shania show in Brazil. Then I can shut down. So it's like, you know, this happened. I got the news in April and wasn't able to really like just stop until like mid August.
Yeah. Yeah. That had to be rough.
So it was rough because it was like, it was kind of a high point in my career. You know, it was like I had all these great artists that I was getting the opportunity to play with. But really, I just like wanted to just stop and just shut down and process everything and grieve, you know? It was interesting. Tough, it's like, in a way, it's comforting getting to play all that much. And I've, you know, that brings me happiness, but I've got, you know, this on this.
Yeah. Well, you had this thing hanging over you. So it's not like, you know, you're looking forward to like, oh, we're buying a new house. You know, this is, you know,
it was stressful. It was, stressful. A lot, you know? Yeah. Yeah. So that was, you know, it was kind of the roughest period I think I've gone through so far, you know?
Yeah. Well, I'm really sorry for your loss.
Oh, well, thank you. Thank you. Yeah, it was tough. And like I said, good thing is I was surrounding myself with some really great people that were very supportive. And, you know, Daniel Powder was great. You know, great to just offer to do whatever I needed. You know?
Yeah, that was really kind. How's your dad doing?
He's cool. They weren't together.
Oh, okay. Okay.
You know, they divorced a while back. Huh. But yeah, it was a tough thing.
Yeah. Sorry, man. I'm glad you got through
thanks.
That.
Thank you.
Hey, talk about maybe some mistakes, if you're comfortable, like one or two mistakes you might have made along the journey and the lessons that you learned from them.
Mm-hmm. I think, you know, for every gig I do or every audition, like I'm always just trying to improve whatever I'm doing. So after I do something, you know, I'll look back and say, okay, how could I have done that better? And a lot of times that's, you know, when I was auditioning for gigs. And if I didn't get the gig, I'd be like, okay, well, why didn't I get the gig? What can I do better next time? So I was kind of doing that. The one kind of mistake I made that I look back on. I remember years ago, I was, I just finished a tour, with this artist, and, one of the artists that had opened for us a couple times, was auditioning, and I was on a little bit of a break, and I got called to audition for this artist. But she wasn't that big at the time. And I was kind of like, I kind of looked at it as a step down. I'm like, I was like, I'll go audition. Just, you know, I can meet some people, whatever, be good to audition, but I, you know, whatever, this is kind of below what I'm already doing. So it was one of those things where I didn't really bring my A game. And I'm one of those guys that always loves to, you know, I always go above and beyond as much as I can. I always like to bring my A game, no matter what it is. And this is one instance where I just really didn't. I just kind of half-assed it. I didn't really learn all the tunes. I just kind of showed up and I was like, yeah, it'd just be cool to meet some people, but I, you know, I don't really want this gig. So I auditioned. Of course I didn't get the gig. And then of course the artist went on to be huge. and the guitarist that I had just gotten off tour with, he auditioned as well, got the gig, and he's still on it. And this goes back to 2006 or 2007, probably 2007.
Oh my God.
This happened. Like, and this guitarist is still on that gig. Yeah. And that guitarist is still on the gig.
Holy shit.
Yeah. So that was one thing where I look back, I'm like, you know what? Should have brought my A game. I mean, who knows? Maybe I wouldn't, that doesn't mean I would have gotten the gig, but at least I could have looked back and said, you know what? I did my best.
Yeah. You like, do that, you know, for you, not for the other person.
Of course. Yeah. And you know, I've auditioned for tons of stuff over the years and a lot of gigs I didn't get. And I can look back and say, well, at least I did the best I could, you know?
Yeah. I totally get it. Yeah, man.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
You know, it's funny. That is a common answer to that question. where people have, you know, I went on this gig, I didn't bring my A game. That's not an uncommon answer to that question at all.
Yeah. Actually, as we get older, obviously through experience, we can look back on that stuff, you know, hindsight is 20/20, and we can say like, okay, yeah, like I won't do that again. Like now I know that if I say I'm going to show up for something, even if it's an audition or whatever, I'm going to bring my A game, you know? Yeah. I'm going to, my philosophy has always been like, make them want me and then I can decide if I want the gig, you know?
Absolutely.
But it's like, I feel like if I didn't want the gig anyway, I shouldn't show up to the audition.
Yeah, probably. Yeah.
Yeah.
Thank you for sharing that.
Yeah.
Musically, anybody who influenced your playing that people, anybody that influenced your playing that people might be surprised to hear?
I think my biggest influences are people that, you know, a lot of bass players influenced by, like, you know, Paul McCartney, you know, John Paul Jones, James Jamerson, Pino Palladino, Marcus Miller, Rocco Prestia, Jaco Pastorius, blah, blah, blah. You know, people that people might be surprised by would be some players that aren't actually bass players. Like I love synth bass players, guys that, you know, play great bass lines on synth. Greg Fillinganes played a lot of the Michael Jackson stuff. Stevie Wonder played a lot of synth bass on his stuff. Prince did some synth bass on his stuff. Like I'm heavily influenced by those guys and what they did on synth bass. And I do play synth bass as well. I love that stuff. So people might be surprised that like some of my biggest influences aren't even bass players per se.
Yeah, man, you got a hell of a massive bass collection for a bass players don't usually have that many basses. You're like bordering on guitar acquisitions.
it's kind of getting a little out of control. This isn't even a complete collection. This is just what I've got at home. I've got a bunch in storage with Shania that I use on that gig. I got a bunch in storage with Gwen that I use on that gig, and a couple others in my own storage.
That's great, I don't really
play much anymore. It's a sickness.
Very cool. Hey man, you're a professional. You need that equipment.
That's right. Yeah. Yeah, keep telling people that.
You do. Favorite musicians you've enjoyed playing with?
There's so many. I mean, like I was saying before, I've been lucky that I've played with a lot of really great people. Like, I haven't played with any nightmare artists. I haven't played with, you know, many musicians that I didn't think were great. You know, obviously, Brian Auger was great. Like, he was, like I said before, he's the first guy I toured with. And, you know, it was real, real inspiring to play with him and just see how he just goes for it every night. Mindy was great as well. She's just great at what she does, you know, and a great person. Really enjoyed playing with her and her band, you know, the Mindy Hebert band, also the Bone Shakers with Randy Jacobs. And, we had a great thing going with that band. I love playing with Shania's band. Me and Corey and Josh, you know, get along so well. And those guys are such great players. Like, I mean, they're just monster guitar players, and they're both so different from each other. You know? That's what's so great. They work so well together. Just like a lot of the solos that are like sort of trading. A lot of the solos in the Shania show are like, it's like starts with half Corey and then goes to half Josh, you know. And they're so great at like just playing off of each other and coming up with some little like harmony things as well, because we come up with some transitions and stuff like that. And they're just so great together. You know, so it's great playing with them. The Gwen band is awesome. We've got a couple guys that were in No Doubt like since the 90s.
Oh, that's awesome.
Great playing with them. Yeah. Gabriel McNair and Stephen Bradley, they play keys, horns, sing backup. And they, you know, they were in No Doubt.
Who's the guitar player on that gig now?
It's a girl named Lisa Lee, okay. a Korean girl. Yeah. She joined with me like when we did the, when the Vegas residency started, we joined at the same time. Yeah. Yeah, and obviously, like, you know, the guys in the bands that I've played in, like the Dirty Diamond, like Fernando Perdomo, you just had him on, you know. Love playing with those guys. We have a great time. The Soundcheck Live resident band, those guys are all great. I don't know if you've had Steve Fecchetti on the show yet, but he's
a long time
guitarist.
Ago. Yeah.
Okay, cool. Yeah, Steve's a great guitar player. Yeah, I've been lucky. Just been able to surround myself with some really great musicians, you know.
That's cool, man. Yeah. Knee-jerk reaction, top three Desert Island discs.
That's a tough one because there's so many great records. But I'd have to say if I had to pick three, Kind of Blue, Miles Davis, Songs in the Key of Life, Stevie Wonder. That's a double album, so that's great. You get a little bonus on that one. And then another one, I would say Oh No, It's Devo. 1982.
Oh, that's a first.
I'm a huge Devo fan. They're not really an influence in my music, but I'm just a huge fan.
Yeah.
I have been since I was a kid. And I remember that album. I got it for Christmas one year, probably 82, and just played the shit out of it. And every time I listen to it, it just makes me happy. You know,
that's cool.
She's got such fun tunes on it, like That's Good and Time Out for Fun and Peekaboo and a song called Speed Racer. It's just like, it's a super fun album. Every time I put it on, I just get a smile on my face.
That's awesome, man. Yeah, that's a first. Oh no, it's Devo. That's a first a song.
It's not considered a classic, and it's not even considered one of their best albums. Like, nobody ever talks about that album. They'll talk about, you know, Freedom of Choice and Oh No, It's Devo. I'm blanking on that. Jaco Homo, is that? No. Are We Not Men?
They talk about that album. Yeah.
You know, Duty Now for the Future. They talk about those albums. You know, but nobody ever talks about Oh No, It's Devo. You know, it's one of my favorites.
That's the great thing about music, though, man. You know, it's like, it doesn't matter what it is. It matters how you feel when you listen to it, or how
absolutely
it makes you feel. Yeah.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Are you good with balancing time, like between working hard and having fun?
Sometimes. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I get antsy, though. Like, if I'm not, if it's kind of like a slow period, I start getting antsy, like, especially now during this lockdown.
Man, if you're not antsy now during this lockdown, yeah, there's something wrong with you.
Everybody is. Yeah. But I mean, I try to, I like a lot of leisure activities. Like, I love snowboarding. And a lot of times, like, if it's in the winter or spring and I've got downtime, I'm up in Mammoth or somewhere snowboarding. I love doing that. I love getting out and hiking the outdoors. So I'd say, you know, I'd say I'm pretty good balancing all that, but of course I could be better at times. And I know my wife, like, a lot of times if I'm home from a tour and it's been a couple weeks, she knows that I'm just antsy. She knows I'm just chomping at the bit to get playing again. You know, she'll remind me. She's like, sit down, mellow out. Like, you know, you're so antsy right now.
That's cool. You just have an anniversary recently or something?
March.
Yeah. Man, how long have you been married?
Yeah. 15 years.
Man, congratulations. That's a good one.
Oh, thank you. Thank you.
Yeah, that's a long time. Yeah. Good for you, man.
It's been a while. Thanks.
Tough question, Dirt. What do you like most about yourself?
I like most about myself. You know, maybe my work ethic. You know, I generally, if I can, you know, step outside and look at myself. I think when I set out to do something, I usually do it. I usually follow through. You know, I think I got that from my dad. You know, he's always had a strong work ethic, and he passed that down to me.
That's great, man. Best childhood memory?
I don't know if I have any best childhood memories. Like I said before, I had a great childhood, great family life. You know, I don't know if I have one best memory. I could bring up one interesting musical memory. So my first concert ever was Sean Cassidy. Remember him from the
70s? Right.
My sister was a big fan. My parents took us to see him, and I remember that. I remember, like, seeing Sean Cassidy, and many years later, I played his wedding. Pretty funny.
Did you really? You played Sean Cassidy's?
Yeah. I didn't get a chance to tell him. I didn't want to bother him. Yeah, totally. I was like, man, this was my first concert ever. I didn't want to bother him, but I kind of wanted to tell him, I'm like, it's the guy's wedding. I'm not going to be like, you were my first concert.
Were you part of a wedding band then that you were playing in? Or like,
Wild. I used to do a lot of cover gigs and wedding band gigs and stuff like that. You know, and that was probably, you could probably look it up on Wikipedia when his wedding was or something, but I want to say it might've been like around 2003 or something like that.
That's really cool. That's wild, man, that you played his wedding.
My parents took us to concerts when we were kids. You know, Sean Cassidy, I think, was the first. I think the second was Sha Na Na.
Yeah.
And that's interesting, too, because I was a huge fan of the TV show, big Bowser fan. And I ended up doing some gigs with Bowser years later. And I had this picture of me doing this, the Bowser thing, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
And I brought it to him to show him. Like, this is me at 5 years old pretending to be you.
I'm sure he's gotten that a lot.
Probably. Yeah. So that was kind of interesting too. Like, you know, and I remember seeing the Beach Boys when I was a kid as well. Like, we used to go to some concerts.
Even some good.
My parents were into it.
Was this all over the country or wherever the various places you guys were living
That was in Pittsburgh. You know, I remember I was a little kid, and then later on when I got into music, I went to concerts that were my choice to go to. Those were just things that my parents were into and brought us. You know?
But that's pretty cool though, man.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
It's funny. My, I've seen so many shows with my sons, and they now they're older, and I realized I'm so happy I did that, because they're all like, you know, we saw the Foo Fighters together, a bunch of cool shows, Chris Cornell and Soundgarden.
Oh, cool.
And awesome. They still talk about that now. This is 15, 20 years ago, I think, almost, you know.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, I'm really happy I did that the other day when they were, and they all want me, they want to get, you know, the Foo Fighters FF logo.
Mm-hmm.
They want me to get a tattoo. Come on, the three of us have to get a tattoo. I have no tattoos, and I'm like, no,
do it.
I'm not there yet, man. I'm not there yet. Sometime
that's
I'm
funny.
Like, yeah, yeah.
That's funny. That's a band I still have not seen live that I really want to see live.
It was an amazing show, man. I remember they did an encore of, I think, "Who'll Stop the Rain" by John Fogerty.
Really?
It was an incredible. I mean, just the whole show was great. Yeah.
That's cool. Such a great band.
Incredible, man.
Yeah.
Hey, tell me something about yourself that people might be surprised to hear or find a little odd.
What would they find odd? I think sometimes I'm kind of into like extreme activities and extreme sports and stuff like that. I think people have been surprised to hear that. Like, I used to be really into skydiving when I was in college.
Holy
I was
like, shit.
I used to go skydiving every weekend. I was big into that. I had a brief moment with hang gliding. I got really into marathon running for a while. I did 12 full marathons.
Holy crap. Really, you know, it's funny, man. I said, man, this guy's really good condition. I was curious if you, was that like genetics or you worked out? But
yeah. I was in much better shape then when I was marathoning. But yeah, I mean, I'd be on tour. I'd be training for marathons on tour, and I'd be up, you know, 5 a.m. to do a 20-mile run before bus call, you know, or like there are times like we, if it was like a, you know, a tour, we're living on a bus, we'd park at the venue in the morning. I'd get out, do my 20-mile or whatever it was, and then go to sound check and play the gig. You know, like I was crazy with that stuff for a while. And so sometimes people that didn't know me when I was doing kind of more extreme stuff, I'll tell them, and they're like, wow, didn't know you had it in you. You know?
Yeah.
I went to Africa years ago. I climbed Mount Kilimanjaro. Like I get into like kind of extreme stuff like that sometimes. And I'm kind of a mellow dude, especially until you really get to know me. So I've told people about some of that stuff. They're like, wow, you don't seem like the type.
No, I think that's, I think it's great. I think it's so important to do physical activities, man, for sure. You know,
I love it. Keeps you young, you know?
Yeah. It keeps you young. Yeah, totally, man. Believe me.
Yeah. Yeah. I get into it.
Who's had the biggest influence on you musically and also personally?
Musically, I don't know. I can't say that I've had like one mentor. You know, some people will say like, you know, they had this mentor. I've been lucky that I've had so many. I've been able to kind of absorb, influence from so many different people that I've worked with, you know, cause you know, all the different kinds of gigs I've done over the years, I've worked with a lot of great people. And, I'm a really observant guy. I try to observe what people do and how they approach things. And if it's something that I can draw from, you know, if it's something that I can incorporate into my own, way of working. So I feel like I get influenced one way or another by everybody I work with.
Yeah.
So I've just been kind of, just trying to soak up whatever I can from all the different musicians I've worked with over the years. And, you know, I continue to.
That's so wonderful, man.
Definitely not done. You know, we're always learning and growing and improving.
Are you a reader? Do you read a lot?
I do.
Yeah.
Oh, you mean like read books or music reader?
No. Are you a book reader?
I'm doing more of that now. I used to a long time ago. And then I went years without really reading many books. And I'm back into it now. Like since we've been in lockdown, I've read a bunch of books.
Okay.
Some musician memoirs and some science fiction. And
who do you like to read?
Getting back into it. I've been really into Isaac Asimov.
Oh, going way back there. Yeah.
Yeah. Going back. Like I was really into the Foundation series and the iRobot series and all that. Now I'm reading the Galactic Empire, total nerdy stuff.
Yeah.
Cool. But I dig science fiction. It's cool. I'm not like a total like expert aficionado, but like if I'm reading, I like to read science fiction. It's fun.
Yeah. Good. You know,
so I'm trying to get back into reading books now.
Good. But you do read musically, I guess.
Oh, yeah, for sure. Yeah,
that's probably helped you get
developed early on.
I would imagine that's gotten you a lot of work.
Definitely. Yeah. I mean, there's been a lot of gigs I've done over the years. I've been reading gigs. Like obviously the pop and rock gigs that I do are not reading gigs, but there's a lot of stuff I do in between, like sessions or just various gigs around LA that have required sight reading. So that's definitely a skill I was thankful to learn early on.
Yeah. It's one of the biggest regrets a lot of guys have, all musicians of all, you know, bass or guitars, even drummers, that I wish I read better.
Yeah. And a lot of people will say that. And I always say, it's kind of like, it depends on like how you came up playing. Like a lot of guys just come up playing in bands and then that'll turn into them being sidemen, and doing that, they don't really have to read. You know, they're in situations where they don't read. I mean, there are a lot of legendary musicians that don't read because they just never had to.
Yeah.
I just, for me, it started in high school. I was in when I moved to Cleveland, when my family moved to Cleveland, they didn't have any bass players in the music program. So I was the guy.
Wow.
And they didn't really have a lot of low brass either, like tubas. So I got thrown into concert band and marching band. I was in the pit orchestra for all the musicals that they did. I was in jazz band, and that just like, that got me started on reading. So I just had to, that's all written out, you know?
Yeah.
And then that turned into me doing more big band stuff. Like I went to a music camp a couple summers and played in big bands, had to read. And I started gigging around Cleveland, like playing musicals, and played in like an all-state jazz band, big band. And that just kind of got me started, you know, the skill I'm thankful that I learned early on.
I
still use it to this day. You know, I still get called for some things where a chart's put in front of me, and yeah, thankful that I can read it.
For your solo stuff, are you putting charts in front of the other guys?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, you are. I think
it's just easiest that way. Like that way people, it's less homework for people to do.
Well, they also, it's crystal clear what you need also.
Exactly. Yeah. So yeah, for all the projects I do, I always chart everything out. Cause also like you can't always count on people to learn this stuff. Like there's a lot of great players in LA, but not everybody puts homework in, you know.
Oh yeah.
A lot of guys will just show up and kind of skate through stuff. And, you know, I just feel like if I've got it on a chart, I'm like, here you go. That's what it is, you know?
Yeah. That's your homework. Learn it.
Yeah. And some guys are better readers than others. Like some people can just show up and sight read on a gig. Others, you know, the chart will help them, but they'll still have to look at it and play through it a few times, you know, on their own before showing up.
How about personally, who's been the biggest influence on you?
Probably just by, you know, my family, my dad. You know, I think I really got my work ethic from my dad. Cause he's, you know, my dad came from pretty humble beginnings and really worked his ass off, spent time in the Marines, got himself a full ride to an Ivy League college.
Wow. That's impressive, man.
You know, got a master's degree, you know, was in the corporate world, just worked his way up till he was president and then CEO of a major company. So he just really, you know, had a strong work ethic and really, succeeded in life, you know, and I think I've just looked at that and I just kind of take that from him. So I think that was a big influence. You know, my sister as well, she kind of went the same route as my dad, the corporate route, and did very well, became a vice president of a major airline, and just recently retired. Actually, she retired at age 49.
What a good time. What a smart time to retire. stressful gig right now, man.
She was vice president of American Airlines, and
holy crap.
She retired she retired at the end of the year, at the end of December. I mean, think about like how the airlines have been struggling and how much stuff they've had to deal with lately. I was telling her, I'm like, wow, you got out at the right time.
Perfect. Like couldn't have picked a better time to get out.
Yeah.
Holy crap. That's awesome, man. Good for her.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's amazing. That's fantastic.
Yeah.
Biggest business win and biggest personal win so far.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Business wins. You know, I feel like every gig that I get is a win. Cause you know, I came out to LA to do what I'm doing now, playing, you know, playing with big artists on big stages, you know, and doing tours and stuff like that. So I feel like every time I audition for a gig and then get offered the gig, that's a big win. It was a big win, with Shania. It was a big win with Gwen. It was a big win with Dancing with the Stars. Great big big win with Mindy. It's like every time, you know, someone calls and said, yeah, we want you to be in the band. It's a huge win, you know, a great, great feeling when that happens.
That is a great feeling, man. Congratulations.
You know, and personally, I mean, I think that translates to personally as well, you know? Yeah. Cause it's me doing what I set out to do, and it's accomplishment. It's a feeling of accomplishment. So it's a personal win as well. And that happens because, you know, gigs to me, it's not just about the money. It's not just about making a living. It's doing what I love to do and getting to do it on a bigger scale. Yeah. You know, when you audition for a gig, that's a, you know, higher profile gig, you know? So that's a,
no, it's definitely,
you know, it's a big personal win as well.
Absolutely, you know? Man. I think you got to separate who you are from what you do, but in the mm-hmm. music industry, I think that's very tough because it's a creative profession. So
yeah,
you know, who you are is what you do to a very great extent.
Yeah. With music, it's never just a job.
Yeah.
You know, it's always a passion. Even if you're playing somebody else's music, it's still a major passion. You know, it's a dream we've all had since we were kids.
Yeah. Favorite place you travel? I know you've been all over the world.
Yeah. Definitely New Zealand.
Wow. What do you like about it? That's cool. Oh,
it's just beautiful. I mean, all the pictures you've seen and everything you've seen in Lord of the Rings and everything, it really looks like that.
Yeah.
And the first real experience I had with that was 2010. I was touring with Brian Auger. We did an Australia, New Zealand run. And we had played in a town called Tauranga in New Zealand. And then we had 3 days off before we went to Christchurch. And I'm like, okay, well, I could just hang with the band and go to the next hotel in Christchurch and wander around a city. But, you know, we do that all the time on tours where you're just in a hotel in a downtown area of a city, and cities are cities. I'm like, I got 3 days. What can I do in New Zealand? So I started looking it up ahead of time, seeing like, what can I see? Where should I go? And found this town called Queenstown, which is kind of like the outdoors adventure capital of New Zealand. It was also home base for a lot of the Lord of the Rings filming. And it's absolutely beautiful. And so I just went there on my own, just like said, okay, I'll meet you guys in Christchurch in a few days. You know, I'm going on my own. And one thing that was a trip was I flew from Tauranga to Queenstown. And the thing that was a trip was there was no security at the airport. It was Air New Zealand. It was a major airline, but it's like, I just walked in, checked in at the counter. They're like, okay, there's the waiting room. And I'm like, there's no security or anything.
So
no.
How did they?
I thought that was amazing.
Yeah, that must have been so refreshing. How do they? Yeah. And I guess they don't have any problems because they wouldn't allow it if they had problems.
No, I mean, that's the thing about New Zealand. I mean, obviously they had that major shooting a few years back, and things have changed. The world has changed over the years, and they probably do have security now. But that was 2010. And I just thought it was so cool that like it was a place that was safe enough that like you didn't need security at the airport. Like that was so cool.
That is amazing. That is really cool.
Yeah.
What a great vibe.
Yeah, it was cool. And so I just went to Queenstown on my own. I found a hotel, and it's this beautiful town on a lake surrounded by mountains, and the lake is just turquoise. It's amazing. And
so did you go swimming or boating or fishing?
I went canyoning, which was amazing. You put on a wetsuit, you hike to the top of this canyon, then you make your way down the canyon by jumping off of cliffs into the water, sliding down natural water slides, rappelling, just jumping into the water. It's like you're in the water all day, just making your way down this thing and sliding down these little waterfalls. And so I did that, which was incredible. Went bungee jumping. It's one of the things you have to do in New Zealand.
Oh my God. Yeah, that's scary as shit.
It's off their kind of like iconic site. It's this bridge in this gorge where it's like the river is way far down below. I don't even know how many feet or meters it is, but it's like just turquoise, beautiful. And you can tell the guys, like, if you want to get dunked in the water, like they weigh you ahead of time and they know like how to crank the bungee cord. You know, they ask you, do you want to get dunked in the water? Do you want to touch the water? Do you not want to get wet at all? And so like, I was like, you know what? I want to at least just touch the water. And they've got it down to a science. Like I jumped and, you know, I'm going, you know, hands first. And it's just like, just my fingertips touched the water before I sprung back up.
Holy it was shit.
Wild.
So, oh my God, like, man.
Yeah.
Do you have video of that? That is
I do have video. Yeah, it's actually on my YouTube. Yeah.
That is scary as fuck. Just watching that. Oh my God. I'm not that guy. Oh my. My older son and my daughter went skydiving recently. I just freaking out watching the video. I was like, oh my God. That's really ballsy to do that. Holy shit. Good for you.
I did bungee jumping like way after I was a skydiver. So like the heights didn't bother me. You know, I'd already jumped out of a plane 100 times, but, I honestly, like bungee jumping was scarier than skydiving to me because it's just so much more real. You're like right there on the platform and you're looking at the ground below and they're like, okay, jump. You know, what, like when you're in a plane, you're that far above the ground where it's just unfathomable. It doesn't even seem real. But I mean, with bungee jumping, you're not that far off. Like, you know, if something goes wrong, you're just a few seconds away from, you know, going splat.
Did you like so call scary. Your wife before you, hon? I'm just want you to know I'm like,
I told her after.
Oh yeah.
I didn't tell her before. And same thing when I first went skydiving, I called my mom and told her after. Yeah. I didn't tell her before because I didn't want them to worry. So it was the same thing with bungee jumping. I called her. I was like, I did something today.
Oh my God. Wow. Good for you, man. So let me ask you a question. When you go down this, like you jump into the falls, this is a stupid question. Probably. I'm sure it is, but I'm going to ask you, where do you put all the shit you have with you? Like, do you have a bag? So, or is like,
they give you a locker. Yeah. I mean, probably every place is different, but this place is like, I mean, they're doing one after the other all day long. It's like an iconic thing in New Zealand. And I mean, it's just such a professional operation. Mm. Like you go in this little sort of office place, you know, and get a locker, put all your stuff, empty your pockets, put it all in the locker, weigh in, and then you just go get in line. And I mean, it's just like one person after the other.
And how do you get back up to the top?
There's somebody with a boat down below, and they like after you go down and up and down and up and whatever, then they lower you into the boat, and the guy in the boat unhooks you, and then they take you to shore.
Wow, that is wild, man.
It was cool.
Holy crap! What a nice. That sounds like a fantastic trip.
Yeah, it was like a great 3 days. Another fun thing down there was they have this thing called sledging. It's basically boogie boarding down whitewater rapids in a river. And I did that. It's like you have this boogie board that has handles on it. And you're just like in this river that's just crystal clear, just beautiful. And you're just cruising down the river like on this boogie board.
That sounds cool, man.
Whitewater rapids. And it's like they do all kinds of stuff like that there. And it's just beautiful. The people are super friendly. Like, you know, Kiwis have that reputation.
Yeah.
New Zealand. I've been there a few times now. That was the first experience I had. And I was down there with Air Supply. We did a tour down there a while back. I went there on a vacation with my wife.
I was going to say, did you get to go out there with your wife? Yeah, that's cool.
Yeah, she came out 2014. We did a vacation there.
That's nice.
Yeah, it's my favorite place in the world. Yeah.
Very cool, man. Hey, three more questions. Best advice you've ever been given, Derek, and who gave it to you?
Best advice. I remember I used to do, you know, a bunch of gigs around town with like some more experienced musicians when I first moved to town. And I was kind of like the young new guy. And I remember once playing a gig and after the set, the drummer comes up to me, he goes, man, just play the groove, man. I was like, what? Am I not playing the groove? He's like, man, you're playing all this extra shit that has nothing to do with the song. Like, just play the groove. I was like, okay. It stuck with me. And it's like in my mind, I thought I was, but like back in those days, I was kind of like a fusion guy. And I played, you know, probably played so many more notes than I needed to, you know? And that was like just something that stuck with me. And it's like, yeah, as a bass player, that's the most important thing. Play the groove, you know? And I would listen back to recordings of myself back then. And I'm like, yeah, I played a lot of unnecessary notes, you know?
Just play the groove.
I just remember like, that's such a simple thing to say to somebody, but like, that's the best advice you can give to any bass player or drummer. Just play the groove, you know? And he's a guy I don't really play with much anymore. I've run into him a couple of times, but like,
he probably
wouldn't even remember it. He's a guy named Sergio Gonzalez, drummer, great drummer. And we used to do these wedding gigs together. I used to work for this like wedding band agency called West Coast Music. And they basically put together, you know, some of the best musicians in town in the form of these wedding bands.
Yeah.
Great musicians. So I got to play with a lot of really great people. He was a drummer I played with a bunch and I was just, you know, kind of like the young and experienced guy, you know, and I just remember him saying that, and I just kind of gave it some thought, like, okay, I thought I was playing the groove, but maybe I'm not. Like, what does that mean to just play the groove? And just kind of stuck with me.
And now you're getting ready to make a groove album, so you must have paid attention to the advice.
Right.
Biggest change in your personality over the last 7 to 10 years, and how much of that has been intentional and how much has just been a natural part of aging?
I think I've learned to just relax and let go and trust the universe a little bit more. You know, I feel like I always used to kind of overanalyze things, and I probably still do it, you know, on some level, but I've learned to just relax a little bit more. and just let things happen. I've learned over the years that like the universe does take care of you, and things do happen for a reason. And, you know, there were times when like I wanted a gig and I didn't get the gig and I'd be so bummed about it. But then years later, I could see why I didn't get the gig. I didn't get that gig because this other gig came up that was great and it was a great fit for me. And, you know, I've had a lot of those kind of experiences where I was bummed when something didn't happen that I wanted to happen. And then years or months or even weeks later, I would see that didn't happen for a reason because something else happened instead.
Yeah.
You know, and the more experiences I've had like that, the more I've just learned like, okay, yeah, we need to just kind of like trust that the universe has a plan for us, you know? Yeah. So I've just learned to kind of let go a little bit more and not overthink things and not be too eager. I look back at how I approached a lot of things back in the day, and I think I was just way too eager about things,
yeah.
You know,
willful.
You just got to kind of do your thing and trust that the pieces will fall into place. You know,
I had this conversation with a buddy of mine sometime over the last year. And, the way he put it was, he goes, don't be part of the results committee so much. You know, just
results committee.
Yeah. Don't be a member of the results committee. Just do what you got to do. And whatever happens, trust that it's, you know, the right thing to happen.
You know,
like you didn't get the gig, trust that it was a reason why you didn't get the gig or something.
Yeah, for sure. And, you know, like I was saying before, I like to look back and try to figure out why and figure out what I could do different, how I could improve. But, you know, I've learned to not really overthink it too much, you know, look at kind of the basic outline of how I can improve on something, but not really obsess over it, you know?
Yeah. Cause you never really know.
And a lot of things are out of your control too. You know,
most things.
yeah, completely. Yeah. So yeah, I've just learned to kind of relax a little bit more about just everything in life in general, you know?
Good, man.
Yeah.
Last question, most important lesson you've learned in life. And that might've been it.
Yeah. I mean, that's probably it. You know, I think those last two things incorporate that, man. Like the most important lesson in music is, yeah, just play the groove. And the most important lesson in life is just let go, relax, trust the universe, do the best you can do. And, trust that, things work out the way they're supposed to.
Well, man, you are a total professional. I really appreciate your time, man. You could tell, like,
thanks, man.
Really got, you know, you're very practical about things, and I could just tell you're very serious about your work ethic, which is great. So,
absolutely.
Let me tell people where they could check you out. First of all, it's Derek Frank, D-E-R-E-K Frank. Derek, any? I know it's probably early. Any like tentative name for the solo project?
Well, it'll just be under my name. I don't have an album title yet.
Sorry, I meant an album title. Yeah, okay.
I don't have that yet.
Sledging.
Yeah, right. Yep. I'm hoping that everything works out the way I want it to, and that I'll be able to release something in August or September.
Right.
Course, like the way things are now, we don't know when we can get back to playing together and gathering and all that. So, you know, we'll see how it all plays out. Again, it's one of those things I got to relax about and let the universe take care of it, you know? So I can't put an absolute release date yet. But you know, I'm pretty active on social media, like Instagram and Facebook. And I always keep my website pretty updated.
Yeah. Your website was great, actually.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah. It's very, very clear. So let me tell people where they can find these things. It's Derek Frank, DerekFrank.com. On Instagram, it's Derek Frank Bass. You mentioned a YouTube channel. What do you got on there?
Yeah, I need to be better about my YouTube. I've got a few things on my YouTube, but I don't keep it regularly updated. I think as far as posting videos and stuff, I'll post more stuff on Instagram than YouTube. I think once I start doing my own thing again and recording, I'll have more of my own videos that I can put up on YouTube.
Great.
But there is some stuff up there. I think if you just search my name on YouTube, Derek Frank Bass, I think my actual channel is D Frank Bass. I think
it's awesome.
D Frank Bass.
Yeah. So check out D Frank Bass on YouTube and subscribe to Derek's channel. So solo record pending sometime this year, with Jim Scott producing. It's going to be an instrumental groove record. Dirty Diamond. You want to talk about that band that you're in with Fernando?
Yeah.
A couple other cool guys.
Yeah. So the Dirty Diamond is, It's a band I'm in. It's not like my band, but it's a band I'm in, have been in for a few years. My close friend Shay Godwin is the drummer. He's the one that initially brought me into it. Fernando Perdomo is the guitarist, and Sam Babayan is the lead singer and main songwriter. It's a really fun band. It's like a, you know, kind of a rock thing with psychedelic undertones. Really great musicians. So we just put out a record end of last year. It's called From the Stars. And then we put out an acoustic complement to that called To the Stars.
Dude, if Fernando's you'll have like 12 records out in the next, you know, 3 or 4 years.
He is so prolific. He's always releasing something. He just released his Yacht Rock album, and then he's got his Out to Sea prog records. He's got like 3 of those now. That guy's always writing and recording. Yeah, he's a super talented, hard worker. But super fun band. We do shows every now and then. It's just shows around LA. We play the Troubadour, we play the Hotel Cafe. No show scheduled now, but it's a really fun rock band. Yeah.
Very cool. And also, if you're headed to Vegas, check out Shania or Gwen Stefani once life comes back to us as we know it. And Derek also does Skype lessons. So if you're interested in that, go to him. Go to his website, derekfrank.com. There's a place you could connect with him on there. Go to the contact tab. He has information about his lessons. Any particular kind of any things going on in your lessons that, like, you know, where you have an expertise or you want to, you know, promote, or
it just depends on the student. I mean, it's all kind of custom tailored to what the student wants. I mean, usually when people hit me up for lessons, it's because they already know who I am and what I do, and they have specific questions. So, I'm just here to help them with whatever they need help with, you know, whether it's technique, whether it's, sometimes it's even like, we're not even playing. It's just like career counseling kind of things.
I would see you being really good with that. Actually, that's what I was thinking.
That's kind of mainly what I do. Like when I do clinics, it's mainly on career. It's like, how do you have a career as a bass player? How do you make a living as a bass player? How do you get plugged into a scene? How do you get gigs? That's kind of like what my clinics are about.
Yeah.
And a lot of times when people hit me up for lessons, it's more about that than it is about playing.
Good.
Because I'm not like some technical wizard, you know. I mean, I whatever I've got.
No, but that being said, man, you're a sight reader with a, you know, 25 year plus career doing this, graduated University of Miami. That's like one of the top music schools in the country, man. So, I mean, you have that in your pocket for sure, man.
Sure.
So anyway, if you're a bass player and you want to make any of those talents available to you, go to derekfrank.com and connect with Derek. And I think that's about it. Anything else I have left out or anything else you want to promote or talk about?
Not really. Not really. This was a fun conversation though, man.
Thank you.
As I've said, I'm a huge fan of your podcast. I've heard many of my friends on it. So, man, it was an honor to chat with you for a while.
Oh, likewise. Very much, man. Yeah. Thank you for everything. Hang on 1 second. I'll wrap this up, and then you and I can chat for a minute. Everybody, thank you so much for listening. If you enjoyed this, please share it on your social media channels. We appreciate your support. Thanks very much to Derek Frank. Again, check out Derek online, derekfrank.com. If you're a bass player and you're looking for some, you know, either guidance in your bass career or actual lessons, hit him up there as well. Shania and Gwen Stefani. My wife's dying to go out to Vegas, so I might.
I'll hit you guys.
I know enough of you guys who'll come to
I'll get you tickets, no problem.
Thank you so much. Go check out Shania and Gwen Stefani on all the bands there. I mean, these guys have great bands. You know, Shania and Gwen have put both great bands together. And hit up Derek Frank Bass on Instagram and on his YouTube channel. It's DF Bass. And most important, especially nowadays, man, remember that happiness is a choice. So please choose wisely. Be nice. Go play your guitar or your bass and have fun. Till next time, peace and love, everybody. I'm out. Derek, thank you so much, brother.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
We hope you enjoyed this show. If you did, subscribe to the Everyone Loves Guitar podcast, and you can do this online at everyonelovesguitar.com or on iTunes. And if you like the show, please leave us a 5-star positive review. The more 5-star reviews we get, the higher our show ranks, and higher rankings mean we get to continue speaking with cool, interesting guests on our show. We'll see you on the next episode, and until then, keep playing your guitar and have fun making music.